Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Ewerson.
On this Do You Like Good Football? Yeah, yeah edition, spotlight on PSG's superstars off to a flying start in the French Liga. But we're hearing through the grapevine that not much longer will they be one for all and all for one. Also, spotlight on this new La Liga season. Yeah, yeah. So far, which of the big three in Spain looks the sharpest? And spotlight on the best of the teenagers lighting up the European leagues so far this season. Yeah, yeah. So in a moment, we will talk about PSG. But first, we've got to have a big welcome back to On the Continent, the one and only Lars Severson. Well done. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Doug. I was just gonna sit there and just milk that applause for a bit longer. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
There is a lot to talk about from your part of the world, Norway. Mm. We could be talking about a walrus called Freya, but should we focus on Bodø Glimt, this small club from the north of Norway that have done remarkable things over the last couple of years in European football?
Yeah, no, straight in with the Norwegian propaganda here, of course, as always. Bodø Glimt played Dinamo Zagreb in the first leg of their Champions League playoff this week in 1-1-0. And it's something like 15 years since the last time we had a Norwegian team in the group stages of the Champions League. So just hearing, I know it's just the playoffs, but just hearing the hymn before the game in a Norwegian stadium is just really strange and but nice. And the funny thing is, a lot of Norwegian fans who are not Bodø Glimt fans find themselves slightly mixed about this, because of course it would be amazing for the country and for the football to have a team in the group stage. Would also mean that Bodø Glimt get a pile of money, and they're already probably the most smartly run club in the country. And giving them something like 20 million euros or whatever you end up with in the group stage could just skew the competition for a decade if they play their cards right. So it's one of those for rival fans. A lot of people feel we should be happy about them and supporting them. And a lot of rival fans going, well, you know, we'd like to maybe win the league at one point as ourselves. And that might not happen if they make it.
Dynamo Zagreb will be looking at this and thinking it's only the first leg. What's going to happen in the second leg?
Yeah, for sure. And that's another sort of slightly surreal thing, is that, again, Bodø Glimt, a team that not that many years ago were in the second tier in Norway, came away from this game against Dinamo Zagreb, who are, you know, a pretty serious European force. They've upset some big teams in the past and always produce good players. They came away from this game feeling, you know what, 1-0, we could have done better here. They had chances to score more goals. So it is a good starting point. They won't have the advantage of the artificial pitch that they're used to in the return leg, of course. That'll be a very different, very different kettle of fish. But it's a decent starting point, and I think they're more than good enough to do it.
Yeah, whilst we've started the preamble, this edition of On the Continent with Norway, we may as well bring in Portugal. They are the
why not, right?
The Norway of the
Bacalao Southern Kings
of Southern Europe.
We catch the fish, they eat it.
That's a very good line. I'll use it at some point. The reason I want to talk about Portugal, Andy, is because of this young midfielder that's just been signed to Wolves, Nunes. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Matheus Nunes has been really great for Sporting. Brazilian-born, qualified for the Portuguese international team, naturalised now. Huge part in them winning the title the season before last, and I think in most other seasons they would have won the title last season as well, but Porto were excellent and just edged them out. I mean, a lot of Premier League clubs have been looking at Matheus Nunes for a while, and quite rightly so, because he can fill that defensive midfield spot and bring the ball out, dribble round players. He's a terrific passer over long and short range, but he can play a bit further forward as well and score goals. And I think you look at the fact that there are a lot of, I guess, sort of social climbing type Premier League clubs who were looking at him, who thought that he could help them push on to the next level. Wolves have been looking a bit stale for a while, and now they've leaned on their Portuguese connection twice in a little over a week, really, signing Gonçalo Guedes first and now Nunes, who should both make a huge difference to their team. I think Nunes will be a big hit here. And when we think of Portuguese players adapting much quicker to the Premier League nowadays, I think that's indicative of the fact that Portuguese football is a bit more physical than it used to be. Ruben Amorim, the coach of Sporting, is part of that. Sergio Conceição of Porto, as we've talked about before, is part of that. And when you look at players like Bruno Fernandes, for example, how they've settled right away, and if you look at, say, go back a decade and say when Nani arrived at Manchester United, there was inconsistency, it took a while. I think genuine hope that Nunes will be very impactful for Wolves straight away.
It is on the continent and everything does make sense, because there is another Portuguese link to the conversation that we're going to have now about PSG, the star team in France, of course, in Ligue 1. And we'll come on to that because Renato Sanches might be one of those players who were caught in the, you know, Portuguese players being able to deal with the Premier League or not question. We'll come on to that. But the first thing I think a lot of people will be wondering about PSG, they've won their opening two games of this new season with five goals each time. And yet their de facto sporting director, Kylian Mbappe, one of the greatest footballers in the world, if not the best, he seemed to have the hump when they beat Montpellier 5-2.
And that is going to stick to him, isn't it? That title of de facto sporting director, rather than someone who we just want to be a figurehead of a new, far more sportingly and politically healthy project.
But Andy, if it was a much more healthy sporting project, then your star player wouldn't be the figurehead of it. He would just be a player, which is kind of the point here.
Yeah, and that's the point that he's made as well. He's said, look, I'm a player. I'm just always going to be just a player. I think when you look at the signings that they've made, they've got Luis Campos, the real de facto sporting director. He's a consultant officially. And Christophe Galtier, who we worked with at Lille, the new coach. And of course, they're going back to play Lille this weekend, the previous champions. The signings have got their fingerprints all over them. So I think that's what makes PSG feel healthy at the moment. They play really good football under Galtier. It feels that they're not as heavily leaning on star players as they might have done before. There's not so much pressure even in midfield under Marco Verratti now. I think they've signed very well in midfield with Vitinha, Renato Sanchez, who you mentioned. Fabian Ruiz is coming as well from Napoli. They've got all the tools they need. So I think you're right to ask, has Mbappe got a bit of a face on? That was definitely the perception. His first game of the season, of course, against Montpellier. He had a penalty saved. And of course, Neymar later scored one, which obviously led to the flurry of quite unstable people on Neymar fan accounts. Going, what sort of club does Neymar not be the first choice penalty taker, etc., etc.? Perceived beef between them. Mbappe had a bit of a grumpy look on him, even when he scored the goal, which of course people are going to make a massive thing of. It seems, through what Christophe Galtier said in multiple reports, that he's actually dealing with some personal stuff, which affected his mood. But every little microaggression, Lars, is going to be huge going forward, as it always is at PSG.
Yeah, but I think you're almost underselling the Mbappe grumpathon here a little bit, because it wasn't just that he took a penalty that got saved and then Neymar took the next one. He was clearly trying to take the second one off Neymar. And we have a second penalty gate here. And I know you skew away from that sort of hyperbole and tabloidy nonsense, Andy, and God bless you for it. But I think you got to remember, we had the first penalty gate at PSG when Neymar came in and took the penalty-taking duties of Edinson Cavani, which caused a bit of a rupture in that dressing room and was never really fully fixed until Cavani eventually left, of course. Whereas, of course, now you have the supposedly... Kylian Mbappe is now the first-choice penalty-taker, but the way it's being reported is that Neymar is the second one if Mbappe is not on the field, or if it was Mbappe who won the penalty, because of course it's a sort of football truism that if you win the penalty, you shouldn't take it. Whereas the way they've tried to explain this, because what happened was Mbappe missed the first one, and then they got a second penalty, and Neymar just picked up the ball and said, "This is me. I'm having this one," which is kind of not exactly protocol. But you'd think now being the figurehead of the team, whether he likes it or not, maybe Mbappe could have showed some leadership qualities and go, you know what, we're going to win this game 100-0 anyway, so we can go have near a penalty, Neymar, it's fine. But instead they had a little bit of an argument. And
102.
Clearly didn't like each other very much. Clearly weren't getting on the field. And add that to that sort of, it's gone a little bit viral, and it was just a very small incident in the game. But there was a moment on a counter where Mbappe wasn't played the ball. He just kind of stopped running and threw his arms in the air, like, what am I even doing here if you're not going to pass me the ball? So clearly, it's entirely possible that this explanation that he has his personal stuff, and he's a little bit rumbled by something going on, but he's not. Chandi, I'm old enough now to remember when Mbappe first sort of came on the scene, and we used to talk about how liberating it was to see a player that talented who didn't have any sort of diva tendencies at all. And that has certainly changed, I think we have to say. And certainly it's hard to see. Paris is a big city, but is that club big enough for both him and Neymar?
That's the question.
Given the fact that... Not Messi obviously has to play. He's there for another season at least, probably. And then you have two more players, neither of whom runs a lot off the ball. I keep harping on about this. I don't think there's any feasible way of carrying three players who don't do much work off the ball.
There's not.
In the bigger games.
No.
Which makes it perfectly sensible from Mbappe's position, having just signed a big new contract and been made, in inverted commas, the director of football, or been given a bigger say in sporting directions, to want to push Neymar out because he wants to play with Messi while he's there. And he wants someone else to be in there to do a bit of running instead of Neymar. But it is still a mess.
That question is really interesting that you asked there, Lars, about has Mbappe changed? And I think it's clear he has got a bit of PSG in him now. You know, does that happen at another club? Does his demeanor shift in that way at another club? It's almost like he's that Anakin Skywalker of European football. You know, incredibly powerful character who is being
sulky,
influenced by these waves of darkness.
Doesn't like sand.
You know, that's
one for the Star Wars fans.
Yeah. That's the question, isn't it? And
it's a really good point. Just very quickly, Andy, look, because if he has got PSG running through his veins now, and he's clearly the person, the matinee idol of PSG, how can he ever leave that club? Do you know what I mean? Anywhere else he goes, he won't have that level of freedom.
Well, there's the sense that he's burnt bridges at Real Madrid, certainly while Florentino Perez is there, at least.
Well, I would say that's the exact reason he should leave, because I don't think it's healthy for him, his development as a player, to become this prima donna who sort of, you're not passing me the ball. I will not run in this counter-attack anymore. And it's like, no one else can take penalties. And I was like, this isn't who he should be. And I think actually getting out of PSG and into a much, at the end of the day, a much bigger club and a much bigger institution at Real Madrid would have been really good for him, and go to a place where he's not the only superstar and he's not the focal point of everything. But instead, he sort of doubled down and signed this new contract that makes him more powerful than ever in that team. I'm saying this as someone who has made fun of PSG a lot over the years, and I looked at them with horror this summer of them appointing Christophe Galtier and making really, really sensible signings and hiring an actual, sensible football sporting director, football advisor, a consultant in Luis Campos, thinking, is PSG actually getting serious? Because with the financial backing they have, if they start behaving like a normal, proper football club, they could be unstoppable. But they still have this this issue of these sort of divas they have to figure out. And I always sort of, it seems almost every summer Nasser El Khelaifi does an interview where he says, well, we will no longer tolerate superstar behavior at PSG. And I was like, okay, well, maybe put some money where your mouth is there.
You are making fun of PSG again, but that's great, because as you can all hear, we do have a lot of fun here on the continent, but you can join in that fun as well. You can tweet us at any time during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotun Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Lars Severston, as indeed Sean has done. And he's asking the right question. If Neymar is on the chopping block because of this supposed beef between him and Mbappe, if Neymar's on the chopping block, is that why he's actually playing very well here at the start of the season?
I think Sean's got something there, because it's partly that. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The fact that he's turning 30, he has to work out how he wants to define himself, the fact that he's World Cup year and he's got something very big that is going to define him as a player and as a legacy to aim for. But you're right, like, where can he go? I think it's,
he was brilliant.
It's the fact that they would consider dumping him, but where do you dump him? Basically, he's nowhere to go. Now, what we've always, and David Cartledge talked about this a few weeks back, and I think we might have mentioned it last week, the thing with Neymar, once you actually get him to knuckle down, you will see few harder working players. He's someone who can grab a game by the scruff of the neck, not just with his ability, but with his desire. Now, I guess the thing is, how does the balance of power shake out? I think if Neymar is prepared to knuckle down and submit to a slightly subordinate role behind Mbappe, recognizing it's Mbappe's team, he's actually got the tools to do it. It's just whether he's willing to submit to it.
He was sublime in this game, I think.
He's been brilliant so far this season.
Man of the match, he's
looked fit, he's looked engaged, he's worked off the ball. Yeah. It's incredible.
And that's the irony here, though, if we're talking about trying to balance out that team. In terms of work off the ball, Neymar does a lot more than both Messi and Mbappe. So if you're going to drop one of those three to make the team more hardworking off the ball, Neymar is actually the one you should, like, stick in, but obviously there's no way you're dropping Mbappe, and Messi is Messi. So, I mean, it is a really strange conundrum for Galtier to deal with. And I also think just in terms of dealing with the situation, Galtier is a very good coach, done fine work at Saint-Étienne and at Lille and at Nice, but this is different. Like, dealing with egos of this magnitude who have been mollycoddled to the extent that some of these players have been, I think that's a real test for him.
Oh, Sylvain, il l'a vu! Oui. Kylian Mbappé! Oui. Kylian Mbappé, il l'a vu! Ça fait 4! Et ça fait peut-être un quart de finale pour l'équipe!
Coupe de France, 68e minute.
The finances of football dominates our conversation sometimes. Last week, some of you might remember we were talking about Barcelona. This was the situation for Barcelona next week, beginning of the Spanish season, La Liga, and they didn't know if their new signings over the summer, the likes of Robert Lewandowski from Bayern Munich, could actually get a game all season because they hadn't registered him. They couldn't because of their wage bills. Now, where are we at with this, first of all, Andy? How did the Spanish first game of the season progress?
They got a lot of those players over the line after freeing up further funding. As we spoke that last week that they were going to try to do, we didn't know whether they were going to be able to do it in time. They did. They were not able to register all of those players. Jules Koundé couldn't play. They kept a clean sheet against Rayo Vallecano anyway. Hooray! They didn't score against Rayo Vallecano with Dembélé and Rafinha and Robert Lewandowski available. What I think is quite interesting here, and yes, I think it will take time. There
Sorry,
she
guys.
Is.
I probably have to let her out into the hallway, I think. She sat there by the door. She wants to go.
Yeah,
she's very, very unhappy with the way Barcelona are running things. Given the fanfare that there was, of course, with these signings, having actually got them on the pitch, there will be a degree of disappointment that you end up with a 0-0 draw at home to Rayo Vallecano. However, I think, one, you have to bear in mind that it's going to take a while for it all to gel because they have brought a load of new players in. Two, I think if I'm not comparing them to the best of Pep Guardiola's sides, but remember when Pep Guardiola took over at Barcelona, he got 1 point out of his first two games. They lost at Numancia and then they drew the first home game to Racing Santander and they went on to have an incredible treble-winning season. Again, not saying that will happen to Barcelona. So I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater and get too overexcited about it. Memphis Depay is probably going to go. Looks like they're going to just write off the last year of his contract and he'll probably end up going to Juventus. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is still interesting Chelsea a lot and a couple of other Premier League clubs.
Well, he's going to come back. Going there for a season or so?
Possibly. Well, he's only been there since January, hasn't he? I mean, they were always likely to bin him at the end of this season because they've got an option to extend his contract at the end of this season. I don't think they'll take it. But, of course, Xavi, and this is why you don't have managers buying players, why you need a sporting director, because Xavi wants to keep everyone, knowing that is not possible, knowing that is financially not possible because everyone in the whole world knows that Barcelona have got a load of financial problems and need to slim down. But I can understand particularly, Lars, why Xavi doesn't want to get rid of Aubameyang. Because, of course, people look at the star attacking players they've got and, you know, there will be some out there who'll say, well, Aubameyang and Lewandowski worked very well at Dortmund. Maybe it could work again. And maybe there's something in that. But I think the thing with Aubameyang, he comes on against Rayo, he has the best couple of chances. Now, of course, he's not involved in the game all round as much as he used to be. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, ever since he arrived at Arsenal, you know, he had a lot of games with very few touches. But he's dynamite in the penalty box. And I can understand exactly why Xavi wants to hold on to him. And there were other players I would ditch. If you're looking at the short term, there are other players who I would ditch ahead of Aubameyang.
Yeah, but maybe not other players. I mean, he'll be on a pretty solid chunk of money wage-wise, I would imagine. And they have Ferran Torres, who can play up front. You've had a great time this summer sort of jumping up and down on Barcelona and their financial shenanigans. There's not a lot to add to that. But I do think it's strange that for all the money they've spent, whether they actually have it or not, for all the levers pulled, you still come into the season with like, do we actually have a right back? It's like, is there any, you end up with Araujo on right back. And you want to get rid of Dest because he's not really doing it for you. And this is Sergio Roberto turning out in that position, perhaps as well, still playing out of position. It's kind of weird. And then you look at who they're linked with. It's like, oh, yeah, we want to sign Bernardo Silva because apparently they don't have enough midfielders. Still don't have a right back, really. Very strange behavior. I do find this club very hard to work out sometimes, I have to admit.
What about Real Madrid? How has their season started?
in, I guess, a very characteristic way. Now, of course, they've not gone crazy in the transfer market, and they're going to make some of their signings wait, I think. Maybe the short term for Aurelien Tchouaméni changes if Casemiro were to go. That's some interesting transfer speculation this week, linking in with an enormous wage rise in going to Manchester United. And you would have to say there has to be a financial imperative for him to go to Manchester United at the moment, because there's certainly no sporting reason, bearing in mind the success he continues to enjoy at Real Madrid. But that he didn't play the first game at Almeria. I think they still miss him when he doesn't play, actually. And we saw that in the Champions League last season. They're a goal down at Almeria, who've just been promoted for a long time in that game before Lucas Vazquez got the equaliser. Brilliant free kick from David Alaba to win them the game. But they made hard work of it. And Real Madrid love to make hard work of it all the time. But they always find a way to get it. I still think they're favourites for this Liga.
But can you see from the opening game how they've had to rearrange their thinking? Because, of course, they spent most of last year planning on getting Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid. And then at the last hurdle, he decided to stay at PSG. But I would have thought that Real Madrid would have had to rethink their entire setup as a result of that on the pitch.
I think maybe they've had to rethink what they were going to be, but they've not had to rethink what they are. I think they know exactly where they are, really. And, you know, it looks as if Asensio is going to stay, even though he's out of contract next summer. That Dani Ceballos, who is impressed by the work he does for the squad, is going to stay. So if stuff is changing at Real Madrid, it's changing very, very gradually.
Bosh?
Well, the front three in this game looked very familiar. It was Vinicius Junior and Benzema, and then Valverde providing some running in a sort of slightly improvised sort of right-sided role. The interesting thing, I suppose, was that both Camavinga and Tchouaméni started this one. And it'll be really intriguing to see how they sort of deal with that changing of the guard in midfield, because obviously that midfield three of Casemiro, Kroos and Modric has been incredible for a number of years and can still probably keep going for a while. But they have Camavinga, who's looked so good when he's come on and was so important to their Champions League campaign last season. And they now spent a lot of money on Tchouaméni, who, of course, was exceptional in France. And it's clear that they want to try to integrate those and try to, you know, start mixing that up. But I think you're right, Andy. The Casemiro, weirdly, Casemiro is maybe the one that's almost hardest to replace.
Mm.
Not because Modric and Kroos aren't amazing players, but just because that number six role is so difficult. Like, it requires so much of you to be at the base of that midfield. You have to be, your positional sense has to be flawless. You have to be able to keep possession circling. You know, there's a lot of sort of unusual skills that you need. And I think both Camavinga and Tchouaméni would probably struggle to take that role on straight away. It's a very challenging position on the field.
Yeah, I think the other thing with Casemiro is how he always sort of walks this tightrope of disciplinary ruin as well. It's really impressive. I don't know how he does it. He's always seems very, very close to getting sent off, yet very rarely is. And I think that is a skill in itself, being able to judge the match situation, judge what you can get away with as well. That's something he does brilliantly. But yeah, it did feel that, I mean, you spoke quite rightly, Lars, about how Camavinga was so great for them and really influential in a couple of those Champions League games this season. But it's a different role, isn't it, starting and being part of that starting midfield three rather than being finishers. Like, Carlo Ancelotti used his faster, younger players. So we're talking about Rodrigo on the right-hand side as well, as Camavinga as well. He used those players as his finishers. If they've got to start the game, that's a completely different role. And of course, they will have to evolve. They will have to move on. We'll see how Eden Hazard works out as maybe not quite one of those sort of finishes, but a sort of Benzema locum slash alternative at various points of the season as well. But they've got good options.
Lars, a lot of talk about Casemiro possibly going to Manchester United. Will that happen or not?
I mean, if the money that's being reported is correct, if you're Casemiro, I think you have to consider it. This is talk of 2 extra years on the contract compared to what he has at Real Madrid and doubling his wages, which even if Man United is a big step down from Real Madrid at the moment, it's a lot of money for a player who is, you know, coming, not coming towards the end of his career, but he's closer to that end, put it that way. And I think it's a hard thing for him to pass up. If that's correct, of course.
We've talked about Real Madrid. We've talked about Barcelona. There are three teams in that relationship, of course, Atletico being one of the big three in La Liga. We've had a tweet from Sam who says, out of 10, what's the likelihood of Alvaro Morata? And let me just add, for people who don't know, he's, you could argue, playing for his career as well at Atletico. What's the likelihood of Alvaro Morata having a redemption arc at Atleti and becoming one of the best strikers in La Liga? It's a great question.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting. And the way he started this season, few would have picked it. I think it's fair to say. Atleti have been hoping to bin him off to Juventus all summer. Juventus have wanted to bring him in. Since then, they've got Filip Kostic, who is a different player, but they're also looking at Memphis as well, and it seems that's quite close. So maybe they've accepted that Morata's not coming. I won't believe that Alvaro Morata is going to stay at Atletico for the season until he's there on September the 2nd. But he's looked great. He's looked really great, considering that he didn't really want to stay. Simeone didn't really want him back. I think the key thing here, and let's bear in mind that in that first weekend of La Liga, of the big three, Atletico are by far the best performers. Away at Getafe, not particularly easy. And they don't just beat them 3-0. They create a ton of chances. They could have beaten them way more. And the click between Morata and your guy, João Felix, is real.
Thanks for bringing João Felix in.
Three assists for João Felix. And so you get the first two goals from Morata, very, very good finishes. And they seem to be on the same wavelength. They're both two very intelligent footballers. No one's quite as intelligent as João Felix, but they're two very intelligent footballers. And then when you get Griezmann on later, who you're talking about playing for your career or playing for your career at Atletico, he's certainly doing that as well. Now, they're obliged to buy Griezmann for 40 million. At the end of this season, which seemed a much better deal at the start of the loan with obligation to buy than it does now, because he didn't have a great season last season. If he plays 50% of the games, so 45 minutes or more in 50% of the games, they have to sign him for that amount of money. We know that Simeone loves him. There are people on the board at Atletico who would like him not to play those games and then not to be obliged to spend that money. But again, good pre-season. It's come on, scored a terrific goal to clinch this game. I mean, isn't it interesting how Atletico have always been like kind of the ugly duckling of the big three, and now all these undesirables are maybe making themselves indispensable? And of course, wouldn't it be interesting if they went on and won La Liga this season with that horrible wonky striped strip?
Well, this is what I was going to come on to. Never mind the ugly duckling. That's Lars's part of the world. But what about the drunken designer? You know, how difficult is it to draw a straight line with a ruler?
Maybe you're always going to get a lot of free kicks because it always looks like your shirt's being pulled.
It also makes you a bit dizzy, I suppose, if you're the opposition. Hang on. Were they not supposed to be in stripes? Looks like they've gone to hoops. No, they're back to stripes. What do you think of it, Lars? The kit?
The kits, I have literally no opinion. It's not. you got to throw to Andy for stuff like that. I really don't care.
Thank you.
The aesthetics of it. It just doesn't really register on my radar.
I actually like it, to be honest. I think what a nice twist on stripes.
But I did think this was. I completely agree that this was the result of the weekend. And Andy's touched upon it, but let's just to put some meat on the bone. I mean, Getafe don't concede three at home very often. Last season, only one game at home where they conceded more than two goals. They averaged less than a goal against the game at home. So going away to Getafe, I know they're not a big name, but going there and scoring three and winning that comfortably is a really difficult thing to do. And I did one thing was Morata playing well. I think Felix looked more at ease. Is that a phrase I can use? Because the thing with Joao Felix at Atletico Madrid is that there's always been terrific moments where you see, oh my God, this kid is very talented, and periods when you think, oh, it's finally happening. But he's always, there's always been this sort of sense that he doesn't really fit in. We've spoken about it so many times on this pod. Here, I thought he seemed to have a pretty good connection with Morata, and the way he sort of found his runs for the goals, you know, that you can imagine that working. And we're talking about a redemption arc for Morata. I think Morata as a striker is always going to frustrate you, because he's not. I mean, he's one of those who, without getting too statty, he pretty consistently underperforms his expected goals. Like his XG, he's just not a very good finisher in terms of being consistent in front of goal. And I'm not sure that's going to dramatically change now. But what he is a player who gives you a lot of other things. He works really hard. He makes a lot of runs. He moves defenders out of the way. And he makes himself available. And, you know, him and Joao Felix, I can kind of see that working up for Atletico. It seems pretty balanced with them too.
Así recuperando Atletico, la viene metiendo Joao Felix para Morata, llega Morata, Morata!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Now, this is what I've been looking for throughout this edition of On the Continent, talking about the young stars who are lighting up the early weeks of the European season, talking of redemption arcs, and not least Bino Gittens, who started at Reading, went to Manchester City, is now a Borussia Dortmund. The sort of Manchester City, Borussia Dortmund connection is clearly very much there. How has he done so far?
Great. Start to this season by Jamie Bino Gittens, and the previous coach Marco Rosa, as you say, was a fan, got him involved in the back end of last season when Dortmund really didn't have that much to play for, but there was always the sense that Edin Terzic, young coach coming back to the club, very popular, was he understands Dortmund and he understands what Dortmund are about, and he was always going to promote younger players. But Bino Gittens did plenty in the back end of last season to make you want to play him again. Was great in the youth league, was held back by quite a bad injury, was held back by the fact that he arrived in the middle of COVID. So if you talk about Jadon Sancho having to adapt to life in Northwest Germany, I think it was even more difficult for Bino Gittens. But he's such an exciting player. really direct sort of dribbler. Got his first goal for the first team last weekend with a great shot from range at Freiburg, albeit one that Mark Fleck and the goalkeeper really should have saved. And it feels already that he's going to be a big player for them this season. Now, another player that's going to be big for them this season, talking of the
He's 18, by the way, isn't he?
So yeah, he's a grand old man at 18. Yusuf Moukoko is still only 17 as stands. And he's in a slightly different situation because him and Marco Rosa never really saw eye to eye. It didn't really feel as if Rosa trusted him. And certainly Moukoko didn't feel that way. It's why he's out of contract at the end of the season. He's not signed a new one yet, because he was never going to sign one, I don't think, while Rosa was in charge. Terzic, the feeling between them is very different. He's valued by Terzic. Came on, set up the two goals that weren't his for Beiner Gittens and Marius Wolf. Scored the middle one with a brilliant finish. And he is an absolutely terrific finisher. Now, it seems as if Moukoko's been around for a really long time, of course, because he made his Bundesliga debut, youngest ever Bundesliga player at 16 years and one day, youngest ever Bundesliga scorer. And because he's so young, last season he became the youngest player to score for Borussia Dortmund's second team as well. Because when he was trying to get back to that first team Vettel and he scored for the second team, he was still so young, he became their youngest ever scorer as well. But I think the connection with him and Terzic, who has improved the atmosphere at the club, is really, really important. I think he will eventually sign on the dotted line. Maybe some sort of medium-term arrangement, because basically he wants to play before he puts the ink on the paper, which I think is fair enough. But you know what, Lars? These two, fantastic as they've been in the opening weeks of the season, are probably, well, definitely not even the most eye-catching teenagers in the Bundesliga at the moment.
No, I mean, we have to talk about Jamal Musiala then, haven't we? Who is still young, but is just looking extraordinary. He's still 19. I want to give Bayern some credit actually for just giving him quite as much game time as they have over the last two seasons. He's gotten quite a lot of minutes for a guy who's very, very young. And of course, Bayern, being the sort of super club that they are with the resources that they have, there's always the temptation to just spend money and bring someone in. But they've given him a lot of time, and he's really developed beautifully and looks amazing. I think someone, God, I forget who it was, someone on the popular social media website Twitter said that he's like in a chessboard, he's like the queen. Like, because he can kind of go in every direction and do a little bit of everything, whereas everyone else has sort of more limits to their movements. Musiala just looks like he can do absolutely anything. And he seems to be throwing... I thought it was really interesting last season that they started moving him deeper and using him as a kind of number eight in the system. I think that's a position where I think Hansi Flick sees him as a potential starter for, or someone who can start for Germany in that role. But he seems to really thrive now. In the absence of Lewandowski, Bayern have started the season in a really interesting sort of 4-4-2 formation, but with Mane and Gnabry playing up front. So you don't have a clear centre forward there. You have basically two wingers starting as forward and kind of drifting around. It's very fluid and fancy and cool. And Musiala has had one of the attacking midfield roles behind it, whether you want to call it a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-2-2, but one of the attacking roles, wide roles behind it. He's really thriving in that role and has been absolutely fabulous so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. The way he's played, it's a little bit like Carlo Ancelotti's 4-4-2 at PSG. And Musiala is the pastore, a sort of central midfield player who's playing...
Already better, we should stress.
playing wide off the left. And he's just got incredible license to do whatever he wants there. And as Lars says, what makes Musiala so exciting and so convincing is the fact that he can go and pick up the ball in deep positions and just take control of the game from there. You know, he doesn't need any invitation to get involved. He's someone who believes that he should be leading the game. There's always looked like that for Bayern, which is why he's thrived in so many positions. I mean, you know, there's been talk, as Lars said, about Hansi Flick playing him in the centre of midfield. I guess part of that is because of the injury suffered by his club teammate, Leon Goretzka, because ideally, Germany would start games with Kimmich and Goretzka in the middle, and then you fit in Musiala from there. I'm still not quite over Musiala not choosing England instead of Germany.
It's out of order.
It's upsetting.
Come on now.
Because the thing is, it's in your mind every time he plays, because he's just...
It will be.
He's just so good.
When the World Cup comes and we face Germany and it comes to penalty shootouts, you know who's going to take the winning penalty. It'll be out of order.
To be fair, if it goes to penalty shootouts, England have done pretty well in that game. I do think when he picked Germany... We did. I don't want to be wise after the fact, because we were all looking at it and saying he's clearly a very exciting talent. But England had a lot of players in that sort of attacking midfield role. And you could see that from his perspective, getting into the England team would be tricky. And so the DFB could make, not promises, but say, listen, you have a chance here, because the road to the first team is maybe a little bit shorter. And again, I don't know the guy personally, so I don't know what he... prioritize the most. The point I'm making is, I do wonder if 10 years from now we will look at the attacking midfielders who are ahead of him in the queue, and we might look at where he is in his career and think, there are some decisions were made that we maybe regret at that point.
It's the legacy of Jogi Löw. It's really the last thing Jogi Löw did for Germany. Put the hard sell on Musiala to commit to the German national team. But a part of the reason it's in your mind is because when you see him being interviewed on German television, and of course German is excellent, every so often he's like, oh, what's the word in German? He's like reaching for the word.
He's English through and through, and he knows it. Finally, gentlemen, I have to ask you to suggest a game of the week for us all to enjoy this weekend. Who wants to go first?
I can do. It seems a nice enough link, since we were just talking about the young exciting talents in the Bundesliga. This is almost like a cultural game of the week, more so than in quality and importance. But Union Berlin play RB Leipzig, which is such a fascinating contrast of ethos, of style, of club philosophy, of everything. There's going to be a significant amount of aggro here, I think it's fair to say, at least outside the pitch, with the Union Berlin fans and what RB Leipzig fans travel. And bearing in mind that Leipzig's not that far away from Berlin, so it's almost semi derby-ish kind of. Certainly in terms of club culture and philosophy, Union Berlin, a club where sort of the authenticity and the link with the fans is very important. Famously, the fans all donated blood to help the club with the stadium and stuff like this. So the fan culture is very important and very strong there. And of course, slightly judgy and cruel types like myself might say that RB Leipzig has no culture. It's an entirely artificial construct. It's a fascinating football experiment in terms of how they play and the way they bring young players through. But culturally, it's just a non-entity, really. At least so far, it'll develop its own culture over time. So the contrast between the two teams is pretty extraordinary. And, you know, RB Leipzig, they have a lot of good players, this team now. And they've started with two draws. They've only got 2 points after the first two games. So they really need a result. And having to go away to a team whose fans really hate them. I mean, that's not too strong a word. They absolutely detest them with the fire of a thousand suns. So I think there should be fireworks in this one, is what I'm saying.
And what would you eat with it? We always need a food pairing to go with your selection. Got to eat something at halftime, don't we?
Just have a kebab. You're in Berlin. Have a Doner kebab rolled up in the thing. It's easy for halftime.
Good,
no,
good
no
old,
hassle.
Good old German cuisine, eh? Well, it is. Kebabs were invented in Germany, as you well know, Andy. What would you choose for Game of the Week?
Is it really a kebab if it's not a Lukas Podolski shop? You know what? I'm going to go for a quick food as well to go with this game, because it's going to be absolutely lightning. Sunday night, 8:30, is on British telly. Porto versus Sporting. First Clásico of the season in Portugal. Sérgio Conceição, little bit sort of in an angry zone at the moment. I always enjoy him when he's in an angry zone, but he's in an angry zone, firstly, because of his son, Francisco going to Ajax, and the stick that certain fans have given him for that, which, well, he's not been particularly forgiving of that, of course. He's going to be protective of his son. Then the fact that he feels he needs more players in the squad. He needs at least one more midfielder.
This is the Porto coach, of course.
Yeah, and of course they're defending champions. Sporting pushed them really hard last season. And like I said, in any other season, I think they would have won the Liga because they're really good. They've lost Matias Nunez. They've also had the fact that Pablo Sarabia has gone back from his loan at PSG. He was very influential for them last season. Marcus Edwards, former Tottenham player, was always being lined up to replace Sarabia when Sarabia went, and he's been pretty good in the opening weeks of the season, so he'll be good to watch as well. Basically, there's a lot going on. Just have a Bifana Portuguese steak sandwich. You won't have time for much else.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.